Nation with Matt Stadlin.
A very good morning to you once again. Donald Trump raging this week, not just as we've been hearing about the Kaepernick advert, the Nike Kaepernick advert, but also, more importantly, and more concerningly perhaps for him, this rather remarkable story in which a mole inside his own administration has written a piece for the New York Times that he describes as the failing New York Times, claiming to be part of the resistance inside the Trump administration. Quite an astonishing story this week, and I'm going to be asking you a straightforward question. Is this mole, whoever it is this mole a hero or a traitor? 0345 60 60 973. If you had the privilege of serving a US president, would you, if you felt that they were behaving not in the national interest, would you simply resign and fight that administration from the outside, or would you try to undermine it from the inside? Is there an extent to which this is the sort of thing that goes on routinely, not just in American administrations, but in British governments too, that people who work in administrations do their best to try to ameliorate or slightly direct in a different direction the people for whom they work? Is this such a sensational story or not? I want to get your steer on that as well. Text 84850, tweet at LBC. So this senior figure in the Trump administration writing an anonymous piece in the New York Times claiming to be part of a resistance movement inside government trying to frustrate parts of Trump's agenda and his worst inclinations. In your view, whether you're a Trump fan or not, is this person a traitor or a hero? Do you have any sympathy for them? Do you think that the New York Times should have published this? And what do you make of Donald Trump's scathing reaction? On Thursday, Trump did blast the anonymous White House official over the resistance article.
Nobody has ever done, in less than a two-year period, what we've done. So when you tell me about some anonymous source within the administration, probably who's failing and probably here for all the wrong reasons, no. And the New York Times is failing. If I weren't here, I believe the New York Times probably wouldn't even exist. And someday... And someday when I'm not president, which hopefully will be in about 6.5 years from now... The New York Times and CNN and all of these phony media outlets will be out of business, folks. They'll be out of business.
Well, I'll be going to your calls in just a moment. 0345 60 60 973. But first, Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent, I'm very happy to say, joins me right now from the United States. Simon, good morning or good evening to you. Is there a perverse way in which this might help Donald Trump?
Well, I think there is a slightly perverse way in which this might help Donald Trump, Matt, because it does allow him, as he did today, when he moves away from all of this talk about the guy is a gutless coward and he needs to be unmasked and handed over to the authorities for national security purposes, when he stops talking about that, he eventually gets to the substantive issue here, which is that the United States is a democracy, and whatever you think of Donald Trump, he was democratically elected. He lost the popular vote, admittedly, but he won in the all-important Electoral College. He is the democratically elected president of the United States with a mandate to deliver on the policy pledges that he made to American voters back in 2016. Now, he's talking today about the deep state, this being an indication that there is this sort of hidden hand of permanent bureaucrats who are conniving against him. I think it's important to draw the distinction between what happens in Washington and what happens in the UK. Veteran listeners will remember Yes Minister and then Yes Prime Minister, in which a sort of career civil service constantly connived to undo the political aims and ambitions of the elected Prime Minister of the day. Things here are different because when a president is elected, he puts political appointees into place throughout his administration. And it's absolutely clear that this senior Trump administration official who wrote the anonymous article published by the New York Times is one of those political appointees. So they've gone into the administration, presumably to support President Trump and presumably to implement his agenda. And yet we're at the end of the week, and we have learnt from Bob Woodward's book that there's this administrative coup d'etat taking place behind the scenes, senior figures within Donald Trump's entourage stealing papers off his desk in a bid to stop him from signing into law policies with which they disagree. And now this author of the New York Times article speaking of a resistance within the White House, it does raise some pretty fundamental questions about American democracy, which is why there are so many voices here saying, look, if you want to undermine the president, you can't do it while you're on his team. Unmask yourself, resign, and then make your arguments against him.
And Donald Trump wants his Attorney General Sessions to go after this mole, doesn't he? What chance is there of him or her ever becoming uncovered?
Well, I think there's a huge chance of him or her becoming uncovered. I mean, we've been through this farcical experience over the last 36 hours with every single member of President Trump's entourage being asked if they wrote the editorial. And of course, they're all denying it from, by the way, the vice president of the United States on down. It took 30 years for Deep Throat, the Watergate source who provided information to the very same Bob Woodward and his partner Carl Bernstein at the Washington Post. It took 30 years before Mark Felt unmasked himself as Deep Throat. And by the way, 30 years after, he initially denied having been Deep Throat. So it's highly likely that one of the people that has said, nope, it wasn't me, is lying. And we will eventually learn, whether it's next week, next year, or in the next decade, who the author of this article was. As for this, and it is nonsense, President Trump saying the Justice Department needs to investigate them, they need to be unmasked, they need to be handed over to government authorities for national security reasons. There is nothing illegal about what this author has done, nothing illegal about what the New York Times has done. And indeed, the New York Times just a few hours ago put a statement out saying, we're confident that the Department of Justice understands that the First Amendment, that's the First Amendment to the Constitution, protects all American citizens, and that it would not participate in such a blatant abuse of government power. The president's threats both underscore why we must safeguard the identity of the writer and serve as a reminder of the importance of a free and independent press to American democracy. That First Amendment guarantee of freedom of speech means that Donald Trump may not like it, but anyone within his administration, including, by the way, the vice president, can anonymously author an article critical of the administration and bung it in the New York Times.
Is there a sense in which Donald Trump might just be enjoying this? I'll tell you why. Here's the theory. We know that some football managers, soccer to Americans, of course, can create a bunker mentality in their team. Us against them. The whole world is against us. We are tight. We are united. And of course, this whole story revolves around the very question of just how united Trump's administration is. So there perhaps is something of a gap in my argument, in my scenario. But nonetheless, I put it to you that this plays to Trump's ability to say it's us against them. It's me and you, the American people, against the mainstream media and even some administration officials who are trying to bring me down, trying to bring down your choice as American president.
Yes, but what is he going to do about it? I mean, you've got figures within the administration this week who have said off the record to political websites here that there are dozens and dozens of people within President Trump's administration who are indeed trying to cut him off at the pass. I can tell you that I reached out to someone that I know within President Trump's administration because I wondered if they had had been the author of this article, given that in the past, on numerous occasions, they have told me that if I knew what they knew, they would be very happy that I was working, that they were working within the administration, basically trying to undo some of President Trump's excesses. I was assured that they were not the author of this article, but everyone here has long known that there were elements within Donald Trump's government, appointed by Donald Trump, that simply don't agree with what he's doing and invariably absolutely recoil from the style with which he's doing it. So now he can travel all over the country, as he's done in the last 36 hours, and say this is outrageous, the failing New York Times, the gutless coward that wrote the article, this is absolutely appalling. But, I mean, I think he's still going to have to confront the fact that every single time he walks into the cabinet room from here on out and he casts a glance around the table and he sees all of these household names sitting around him, he is not going to know which of those figures he can trust. And that is a deeply, deeply destabilizing position for any American president to be in. And he can't very easily fire them all because he would find it almost impossible to replace them all with loyalists. So I think this does raise massive questions about his capacity to govern, even before we've got past the midterm elections in which the Democrats are likely to take control of the House of Representatives and institute impeachment proceedings against him. This is a big moment here.
Paranoid president, of course, could be a very dangerous thing indeed. Finally, Simon, he's going to win again, though, isn't he?
Is he, Matt? Listeners of this radio station will be very aware that my predictions back in 2016 went awry. And at that point, I decided I would make no further predictions about the outcome of American political races. He can count on between 35% and 40% support of the American electorate right now. We witnessed something quite interesting here over the last few hours, which was the reemergence of Barack Obama on the political scene. We've heard absolutely nothing from him over the last few months, although I should say I did actually personally witness a speech that he made back in Johannesburg in South Africa a few weeks ago, the Nelson Mandela Memorial Lecture, which in many ways served as the precursor for the speech that he made in Illinois today, in which he indicated that he is now going to start campaigning all over the country to support Democratic Party candidates in the midterm elections. What on earth has happened to the Republican Party? He asked, how can we be dealing with all the crazy stuff that's going on at the White House? So the political playing field here is about to change. Donald Trump is confidently predicting, and you heard it in that clip that you played earlier, that he's got another 6.5 years in power. Let's see what happens in November in these midterm elections, and then let's see who is the candidate that he will be facing in 2020, because we still have no idea which Democrat is going to be taking him on.
Well, that was the very question I was going to just put to you before I let you go, Simon. Where is this knight or female knight in shining armour who's going to come to the rescue of the Democrats and roughly 50% of the American population who are desperate, who are crying out for a plausible alternative to Trump, someone who could actually take him on in this age of social media and being able to reach out beyond and over the heads of the mainstream media? Where is this charismatic Democratic candidate?
Well, interesting that you say that, because Barack Obama in his speech today said to Democrats, do not expect the arrival of a messiah. Do not wait for a savior. He indicated that he thinks it's all got to come from the grassroots. And if you look at what's been happening just over the last few weeks in various local elections that have taken place in the United States, the left wing of the Democratic Party, the sort of the Bernie Sanders brigade, the Democratic Socialists of America, have been making making enormous inroads in winning races that few people thought they could win. But we also saw this week in the Supreme Court hearings that have been taking place up on Capitol Hill, Brett Kavanaugh has been grilled by members of the Senate Judiciary Committee as he tries to secure a seat on the Supreme Court. We saw several potential Democratic candidates who happen to be on that committee, including Senator Kamala Harris of California, Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey, and others who were really giving Brett Kavanaugh a grilling, and giving him a grilling because they knew that this whole thing was being seen on television, and they see this as the launching pad for their 2020 presidential bid. It's only 2018, but you know how these things go in the United States. Election campaigns last the better part of 2 years here. Once we get past the midterm elections this November, of which there will be extensive coverage here on LBC, once we get past that, then all eyes will be on the White House race for 2020.
Simon Marks, thank you very much indeed. Fascinating as ever, bringing us right up to date there with this mole inside the Trump administration and also much more. Looking ahead to the future, will Donald Trump, as I predict right here and now on LBC, will he win a second term?